We now bring you exclusive HBO audio footage of the Carey Price media scrum following his 3-1 victory over the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Carey, big victory against the Blue Jackets team. This one was a lot more impressive considering the first one is against the Buffalo Sabres. It looks like you're completely healthy. Are you ever going to tell us what your injury was?
No comment.
Carey, lots of rumors about your personal life. Is everything good with your marriage?
No comment.
Carey, does it concern you that so many fans want to see you traded for a number one center?
I said no comment.
Hey, Carey, I got a two-part question for you. In exact medical terms, what was your injury, and what's the current status of your marriage?
I don't know who you are, and I don't know what you want. If you're looking for answers to your questions about my injuries or my marriage, I won't tell you. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you just let me play hockey, that'll be the end of it. If you stop asking me questions, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Three-part question for you. Talk about your injury, your marital issues, and when you think you'll be traded.
You know, I have this distinct feeling that Brian Burke probably used that same monologue at some point while being GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's true. They probably...
That is so him.
Yeah. They probably lifted it straight from a Leafs press conference and it inserted it right into the Taken movie. It was about the same time, wasn't it? 2008, Brian Burke era? No? Yes? I don't know.
Sounds about right, but it's all a haze to me because it was just that. It was the Brian Burke era, and tonight I get to watch his Calgary Flames... A team just as blustery as he is, it seems like, take on the Leafs.
They look pretty good, though. Johnny Gaudreau is looking really, really good. And Mike Smith is providing them the goaltending that they haven't seen since possibly Mika Kiprusoff days, maybe.
Well, that is going back, isn't it? Back to those halcyon days when the Flames were able to ride that goaltending all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. Why does that seem like it was 30 years ago?
It was. Kiprusoff, Ginla, 2004. Wow, that was a long time ago.
Memories like the corner of my mind.
Keep going.
But, you know, I'm worried about this game. I got to be honest with you. The Capitals game on the weekend bothered me enormously, not just because Ovi scored a hat trick and all for a worthy cause at that. Mm-hmm. The Leafs D still worries me. I just feel like this team has to make a trade to shore up the back end. Otherwise, they're not a serious contender. I refuse to put them in the same category as the Lightning.
Yes, it's tough to put them in the same category, anybody in the same category as the Lightning. They've got top quality forwards, they've got a great defense, and they've got a very capable young goaltender. But the thing is, when you talk about defense, I keep going back to the Pittsburgh Penguins of 2017 Stanley Cup winning Pittsburgh Penguins, where they didn't win with a very good defense. In fact, Ron Hainsey, of course, is now anchoring your blue line just like he anchored the Penguins blue line back in June.
Great success.
Yeah. So that's why I don't see yourself, you shouldn't be too worried yet. And again, I know it's because Crosby and Malkin, basically, when you've got a Crosby and Malkin on your team, they can take you a long, long way. So, but you do have, of course, the next one. I don't know. Does he have a great nickname yet? Austin Matthews?
Who?
I am Austin? I am Austin? Is that his nickname?
I prefer to call him the Chosen Heralded One.
Chosen Heralded One, yes.
You know...
Loved by all of Canada.
Loved by all of Canada, embraced by all Canadian hockey teams who are probably looking with a great deal of envy at Toronto in this regard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm a little bit envious of? Carey Price's back-to-back starts since he's come back. It's like some kind of weird... It's like wizardry. He's a magician. He comes back, your team looks completely different.
Yeah, obviously the confidence level goes up. They don't have to play as tight. Maybe they can take more offensive risks. But yeah, it was really good to see Carey play, and one of the things is I watch Carey Price closely in the nets as when he moves side to side, and I'm by no means a goaltending expert.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. But when you see him slide across on his pads and he looks in control, whereas where he doesn't overslide and say is no longer square to the shooter and doesn't lose his crease, I could see that last night in the Columbus game. I was watching him closely to make sure he wasn't kind of overcommitting. And again, to my untrained eyes, he looked like the old Carey Price that we've seen versus the early Carey Price where he was sliding, oversliding and coming out of the crease and not being square to the shooter, thus giving the shooter plenty to shoot at. So yeah, it was really good to see. I think the controversy is as we addressed in the opener, is that now Carey doesn't seem too happy with the media and what happened, because in the 3 weeks that he was off, you know, there were lots of rumors about what was going on in his personal life. His wife had to take to Instagram to say that, no, they're not getting a divorce. And so in the scrum, he only spoke for like less than 2 minutes. And there's actually media complaining that Carey Price isn't giving them enough time. And I'm like, geez, like he can't win or
either way. Yeah,
it's like he does well. And then people are on him for not speaking enough. He loses and then they rip him. And so it's just a no-win situation for Carey. And people have to be careful. The media has to be careful.
They do.
About how they're perceived. Because, I mean, we hear all these stories about how free agents do not want to come to Montreal. And this is a huge example of, I mean, people outside of the team, potential free agents, are looking at what Carey Price is going through. Carey Price, the best goaltender in the NHL, or one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, the patron saint, 8-year contract, and he's going through a tough time through the media. Like, who wants to come to that?
Well, especially someone in Toronto who got an 8-year contract and is in some ways showing the effects of his frustration with the media. Mike Babcock's been testier and more irritated than I've seen him in a long time when it comes to answering questions from the media. But from the Montreal perspective, it's profoundly unfair. It's a true catch-22, isn't it? If he does well, they ask him questions about his marriage. If he's doing poorly, they're asking him questions about his health. I can't blame him. I mean, look, he's supposed to make himself available to the media for a reason. As a player, you have a certain responsibility to do that, but not if the media is doing everything in its power to find some of the most sensationalistic angles imaginable. And I thought it was bad here in the Toronto market. It is just 10 times worse in Montreal.
It is, and it's starting to concern me because even earlier in the season, it was kind of downplayed a little bit, but Sergio Mameso, the color radio guy for the Montreal Canadiens broadcast on TSN 690, actually took to Twitter and pleaded with the media for them to go easy on Alex Galchenyuk. Now again, what does that show to the outside players outside of Montreal when they see that a member of the media is pleading with their own media to, hey, go easy on Alex, let's give him a chance, because every time he was screwing up, people were all over him saying that he's not a center, that he, you know, they were going through his personal life. So it's really hard on current players of the Montreal Canadiens with the media, and I think Carey Price is kind of at the end of it all, where he just is short with his answers and doesn't want to deal with it anymore. I mean, they went into his personal life, and his wife had to go to
social media. Yeah, I know.
To social media. It's just very unfortunate, and it reflects poorly on what's going on or what can go on. Again, because we're not painting the whole brush of the Montreal Canadiens media, French or English. It's whoever it is, certain people that are maybe pushing too far that, you know, unfortunately paints picture in a bad light. So just a few of them whoever's doing it is making everyone look bad.
Well, and I think you'll agree it comes down to that lovely ultimate equalizer, if you will, which is winning. When you're winning, you can generally survive on mediocrity from individual performances. You know who's going to start feeling the heat soon here in the Toronto market? Are William Nylander and Mitchell Marner. Did you know that between the two of them, they have 6 goals on the season? Like, I'm not a rocket scientist or a hockey engineer, per se. I don't even know what that means. But I'd like to think that when you're on pace for 18 goals, you're not going to have a lot of leveraging elements when it comes to your negotiations. Am I wrong in thinking that? Like, what's up with that? That's not good.
Yeah, I know. It's funny because Marner previously was on the fourth line, and now...
Two goals.
Yeah.
Two goals. Come on.
And then he played himself off of that fourth line, and now Nylander finds himself on the fourth line. But the thing is that they know that they're good anyway. It's just a temporary thing. So, I mean, everyone knows that Nylander is a special talent, and he should play himself out of that fourth line status. So, I don't know how much of a punishment it is. How much can you punish a player?
But that's not good enough for me, though. Hearing you tell me that we know he's good, but he's not performing, I'm not quite sure how that works in the psychology. Because maybe I'm an old school guy in that regard, having sat through the Ballard era and having dealt with the Quinn years and what followed afterwards, where there were always certain expectations, highs and lows. But in my books, if you're really good, you're supposed to get it done. This is not the tri-league. We've heard that expression before, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, William Nylander with four goals in the quarter pole mark of the season tells me that there are one of two problems. Either he's not receiving Babcock's message properly and is tuning him out, in which case the coach has to be concerned, or it could just be a case where this team is so stacked that they just don't really know what to do with him. I mean, have you seen the different combinations he's been involved with? They've played him on like six different pairings, and it's not working for him. They've got to figure out what to do. He's on the fourth line now. I jokingly tweeted that if there were a fifth line, he'd be on it.
Yeah, it's funny how it parallels a little bit about what's going on in Montreal, or what has gone on in Montreal with Alex Galchenyuk again, going back to Galchenyuk, where he was on the fourth line, and then a lot of people were saying, well, you know, he's not a fourth-line player. And eventually he did play himself off of the fourth line and was then paired with their number one center, Jonathan Drouin. And I think that's kind of expected. That's going to happen. I can't see Nylander playing the rest of the season on the fourth line. I don't think management will let it happen.
I would so love for him to walk into Mike Babcock's office and just say, you know, I have a very special set of skills, and if you don't play me properly, then... I'm going to create problems from you come contract negotiation time.
Wow.
In which case, Babcock's answer will probably be, don't let the door hit you on your way out.
Oh, yeah. It's Babcock's way or the highway. Carey Price is back, ladies and gentlemen. Two games, two wins, 3-0 over the Sabres, 3-1 over the Columbus Blue Jackets. I do want to go back to Saturday night, though, and talk about the shutout that Carey Price got. If you go back to the tape, Sam Reinhart lightly bumps Carey Price at the top of his crease, and Kane puts in the rebound. If you watch Carey Price's reaction after the goal is scored, he doesn't even complain. He doesn't even get up and skate right away to the ref or yell and scream saying, hey, I was interfered with. You would expect him to do that considering he was 30 seconds away from a shutout, but Price knew it was a goal. And here's the problem I have with that. I'm happy Montreal won. Of course I am. But the NHL needs to sell their game. And how do you sell sports? Offense. Offense is what sells sports. How does the NFL sell sports? How does the NFL sell their game? More touchdowns. How does baseball sell their game? Juiced balls and more home runs. The NHL is hurting itself by disallowing goals that should be goals. The NHL needs to allow more goals. People love offense. People love high-scoring games. People love to see record-setting goals and points by individual players, and the NHL is just not allowing that. They're shooting themselves in the foot. They need to allow these goals. Shutouts, schmutouts. Who cares? Let's get some more goals.
I suppose there's something enormously comforting in knowing that you can have a lot of players who are struggling this year, but a lot of it goes unnoticed during the fever that comes with winning and winning a lot. And the fact is, the Toronto Maple Leafs have been consistently winning from day one, with the exception of an early swoon in October. And as a result, certain things start going unnoticed, like the fact that Mitchell Marner only has two goals and that William Nylander only has four goals, and that players like Gardner and Zaitsev are not nearly at the same pace that they were last year. And ultimately, you start looking for other heroes to step up, and they have for the most part. It's the Leafs' depth that have saved them so far this year, but at some point, these vaunted young players, of whom some were tied to long-term contracts and others are playing for long-term contracts, They have to step up, and they have to make a difference in some of these games, because you can only get by on this perception that everything's hunky-dory until you hit your first massive losing streak and have some adversity in the playoffs. And that's when you'll see what separates the boys from the men in the National Hockey League. This is certainly where the acquisition of Patrick Marleau and the presence of certain players like Connor Brown and Leo Komarov have made a big difference. These are competitive players who try to chip in both offensively with incredible versatility from Mike Babcock as he struggles to find the right line combinations. Look, the Maple Leafs are still a team that's very much a work in progress. There are still a lot of moving pieces that need to be mixed and matched to create a winning formula that's consistent and stable. Until Mike Babcock finds that, we're going to be running on a lot of best and well-intentioned fumes, and that's what concerns me. Our next guest here on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan, Kamal, is someone that we've been waiting to speak with because we see him on our television screens every Saturday night. I'm talking about Kyle Bukauskas of Hockey Night in Canada. Kyle, thanks for coming on HVL.
My pleasure, guys. How are we doing?
Great, great.
No complaints. No complaints other than, well, it depends who you're asking that question, right, Kyle? Because as the Leafs fan, I've been in a pretty good mood for the most part since the season started. And watching the Hockey Night in Canada games, my first question is, why aren't we seeing more home games, which is kind of a staple? As someone who's been watching hockey for many years, I'm always dismayed to see the lack of home games. What's your take on that? Why aren't we seeing more home games in Toronto, given the excitement and media hype surrounding this team?
That's a great question. I mean, I know I saw in, I believe it was the Toronto Star earlier this year, there was a pretty good column that kind of dissected it and just looked at, I guess, the decline of Toronto Saturday night home games over the last 10, 15, 20 years even, because it used to be a foregone conclusion, right? You flipped on the television on Saturday at 7 Eastern and there was, you know, Ron McLean down in the vomitory there, and it was Matt Sundin and Curtis Joseph on the ice at Air Canada Center, and that was kind of what a lot of people, certainly kids in my generation, grew up with. And now we're in a situation where it has been a fairly road heavy schedule on Saturdays, and you know, it's interesting why that is. I haven't heard one way or another as to why it's gone that way. I mean, from a television standpoint, I know it's by no means is it any cheaper to do the majority of the games on the road, because then you're traveling the majority of your crew that lives in Toronto. So there's that fee attached to it. You know, you've got a lot of your resources already in Toronto and ready to go for home games, and now you're having to send that out on the road, so that adds an additional fee as well. So it certainly wouldn't be a broadcast request to have more games away from the Air Canada Centre on Saturdays. But you know, let's face it here. You know, the ACC is one of the more busiest buildings in North America, from concerts to other live events and sporting events too, with the Raptors as well. So you know, there's a lot going on in that building throughout the week, and perhaps we're just entering an era now where there's a lot more opportunity for events to come into a place like the ACC, and now you're seeing kind of the effect of that with more Saturday night Leaf games on the road. But all I can speak from is from a broadcast standpoint, and I know it's certainly was a request made from that side of things. And so as far as the real reason why, you know, I think it may just be the heavier, more condensed schedule at that building that goes beyond a hockey game.
Kyle, with myself being known as the Habs fan, it's been easy to talk about a lot of the negatives that have been going on with the Montreal Canadiens. But as of a few hours ago, there's been some positive news coming out of Montreal, and that is that Carey Price will be starting against the Buffalo Sabres tomorrow night. Can you talk a little about how important it is for the Montreal Canadiens, or whether it'll make a difference, considering that Carey Price wasn't really the same Carey Price that we've come to know?
Well, I mean, you know, let's face it. You're right. The start to his year was something that nobody saw coming, and nobody has really seen from him since he's been an everyday NHL netminder. And his numbers, you know, if it wasn't for Carey, you know, it wasn't for the name Carey Price, if it was somebody else that had the numbers that he had to start the year with, as most people have said, you know, he would be down in the American League by this point, because it just hasn't been a start that anyone foreseen coming, and hasn't been one that would suggest he is an elite number one goaltender in the NHL. And then the injury happens, And then they're a little vague about, well, it's a minor issue. It shouldn't be that long, day to day. And the days became weeks. And then he comes out and says, well, I expect it to be a two-week recovery process. And then it goes beyond 2 weeks. And the rumors and the different speculation as to why he's out and why it's taking as long as it has, I mean, it's just kind of taken on a life of its own. And I think from that standpoint, you know, there's got to be a huge relief there for him and the team that's all finally over with. And he's getting back into the net again, and it's absolutely crucial, I think, for this Canadian team, because there's no arguing if they're going to put together some sort of run here, some sort of streak to try to get back in the playoff race and overcome what's been an absolutely outside of a stretch there towards late October and early November, where they put together some wins. You know, it's been a fairly disastrous season for them so far, and if they're going to get back into the mix of things, because certainly when you look at the Atlantic outside of Toronto and Tampa, that division is wide open right now. They need a goalie like Carey Price, and I know, again, his numbers haven't suggested as much early on here in the season before he got hurt, but there's no way this team can conceivably make the playoffs if he's not in the net for the most part every game for the remainder of this season.
And as you mentioned, Kyle, it's Toronto and Tampa essentially in the division. And I think, again, going more with the positive thing, I think that's actually one of the positives for the Montreal Canadiens, that the rest of the division isn't that good. So despite their terrible start in the first quarter of the season, I think there's do you still see hope for the Montreal Canadiens?
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I know a lot of people like to look at, you know, yesterday was just U.S. Thanksgiving, and a lot of people like to look at that date as far as whoever's in a playoff spot at that point. Chances are those are going to be the majority of the teams that will make the postseason when the springtime rolls around. And they were showing some different numbers over the past couple of years. I think last year, you know, 13 of the 16 teams that qualified for the playoffs were in a playoff spot at U.S. Thanksgiving. So there certainly is some merit behind those numbers. And the Canadians, after their shootout loss against Nashville, I think put them 5 points out of that second wildcard spot. So to say that they're done and they're out of it, I think that's a little bit out there, I think, right now, because the numbers certainly suggest that they're still in the mix again, because, you know, as we were talking about, the Atlantic division is still wide open. And you've got some teams in the Metropolitan division that are just kind of hovering around. There's a big kind of a cluster there in the middle where there's some spots very much up for the taking. So yeah, on that side of things, that's good news for Montreal. But again, you know, this team has a long way to go before they start stringing some wins together. You look at the amount of time, 9 times this season, they've given up 2 goals inside of a minute. And, you know, I think after that certainly suggests this is a team that, you know, can get fragile at times. We've seen it, certainly that trip through California where they got down a couple goals and the game completely got away from them. You know, so going forward through that, that's got to be something that needs to be rectified here for this team, because it's going to take quite a turnaround here if they're going to get back into the mix. It is only 5 points, but as we know, in an era with shootouts and games going beyond regulation, and there always being a winner determined, it's a lot tougher to pick up points here, and they dug themselves quite a hole with their start.
You know, Kyle, one of the reasons that we're thrilled to have you on our show is because we're big admirers of your work, and you're someone that is surrounded by extraordinary names and part of a real institution in this country. I mean, Don Cherry, Ron McLean, Scott Oak. These are amazing, dynamic personalities that have enchanted Canadians for decades. And now you're part of that. Maybe give me your perspective on how that feels and how you found yourself in this position and opportunity to be part of what is a cultural mosaic, the great pastime of hockey in Canada.
Yeah, well, first off, thanks, guys. I don't know. It's strange. I mean, I'll be honest. I haven't, you know, I don't put myself with those names. You know, I understand that, you know, it's, in a way I am part of the show, and you get to be part of, you know, as the broadcast opens right at 7 o'clock Eastern. And it's, I don't know, I don't mean to be cliche here, but I mean, it really is an incredible honor. You know, when I first went to school for this and got into this and had the passion to pursue a career in this field, I mean, I never considered working on Hockey Night in Canada or anything of that degree. I mean, I just, the thought never crossed my mind. It was, you know, something that, you know, that was for the real pros. That was for the guys that really knew what they were doing. And you know, I still argue to this day that I'm still trying to figure out what I'm doing now. But, you know, you've got a group of people here, and you outlined the names. You know, Scott Oak is just really, as far as a ringside reporter goes, he truly does set the standard in this country. And he's someone that I really admire and continue to look up to, even though, you know, him and I are now working on the same show. He's just somebody that is so far and away, you know, the elite when it comes to the job that he does week in and week out, and the storytelling that he brings to fans watching across the country in their living rooms. So, you know, it's strange, you know, it really is. I mean, I think the first time it really sunk in, it was the playoffs last year, and we were doing a game between Montreal and New York in the first round. And I think we were in Madison Square Garden, and, you know, I can hear Ron McLean in studio, you know, kind of setting the stage before throwing to us in the rink. And, you know, it was going to be him kind of talk and to throw it to the rink, and then the natural atmosphere of the crowd was going to take it for a couple of minutes as the players came onto the ice, and then I was going to have my 15-20 seconds before the national anthems. And, you know, as he wraps up, he goes, you know, Kyle Bukowskis is the voice you'll hear next, enjoy, everyone. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, listened to that and went, holy crap, yeah, that's me. And so it really is a surreal feeling being able to be a part of it, and, you know, just sitting there waiting for things to go, and you hear the music and now the pageantry that, you know, that you know, we all grew up with. And you know, I mean, geez, for just to speak from the era that I came from, you know, working with two guys like Jim Houston and Craig Simpson every week, you know, it's one thing to be able to say, I grew up listening to Bob Pohl, or, you know, I grew up listening to Jim Houston and stuff. I mean, I grew up playing the video games that Jim and Craig did the commentary for, right? So it's mm-hmm. a completely different ball game as far as just from my upbringing, and now being able to work with these guys and to talk with them, you know, around game days and about, you know, how we're going to approach our broadcast from each week. It's really something that, you know, I really do, you know, I cherish, and you certainly don't overlook it by any stretch, because, you know, it is an absolute dream job. And for me, it was, you know, wasn't even a dream job, because I just didn't consider this as a possibility. So to end up here, it's been a lot of fun, guys. And as you know, just to be part of a Saturday night, and you know, when you step out into the bowl of an arena and you see a little kid with his nose pressed up against his glass waiting for his hero to come on the ice for a warm up, and you kind of look around at stuff like that and think, you know, this is why we do it, right? So it's a lot of fun.
Kyle, you're born in British Columbia, Campbell River. Were you a Vancouver Canucks fan growing up?
Actually, I despised them growing up, to be honest. I don't know where it came from. I don't know where it came from. It was like my favorite player growing up was Paul Kariya, and through that, you know, my favorite team was the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim when he played there. And I can't even really explain how that came about. I would probably, again, just growing up watching the Mighty Duck movies and just being you know, familiarizing with that Mighty Ducks logo, and then them having an NHL team and a star in Paul Kariya. And I loved the number 9, and I wore that, you know, growing up playing minor hockey. So that was my favorite team. So that was already taken off the list. And then I'm not sure what ignited the hatred for the Canucks, but I don't know. Maybe it was just, you know, growing up with the kids that I went to school with, and you know, they were never shy about trying to rub it in your face if their team beat your team. And I always just found there was an arrogance about them, and I just always wished as a kid growing up, like, I can't tell you the relief I felt, guys, when Boston beat them in Game 7 in 2011. It was such a relief, because you always had that bowl in your pocket, right? You always had that bowl in your pocket, the fact that they'd never won a Stanley Cup. And I was so worried that was all going to come to an end, and I would never hear the end of it after they finally won. But it didn't happen. But, of course, now you look through it through a completely different lens, and then you're a little more objective, at least at this point. But, yeah, not a Canucks fan, to say the least, growing up, despite the British Columbia roots.
But Ari and I, we agree that in addition to you being great on TV, you also have one of the friendliest faces in all of sports, it seems, in all of sports media. And does that allow you to ask the harder questions, like especially in Montreal when things are going poorly? Do you get a little bit of slack because you have such a friendly face that you can ask the harder questions to the players?
I'll tell you what, I've never considered myself having a friendly face. That's the first time I've heard it. So first off, thank you for that. I will take it.
No problem.
But I don't know. It's more of a respect thing, and you know, it's it takes a bit of time for, certainly when you're working with a team, to get to know some of the players and to get to a point where, you know, you're in a situation where you can ask a question that may be a little bit more difficult than others, and they understand where you're coming from, and thus you'll get maybe a little bit more of an honest answer. Because, you know, I think it's a big part of with professional athletes is building a trust with them from someone that does what I do. And when you're able to do that, then you are able to get a little bit more of a revealing answer when you're looking for something a little more in depth, or, as you say, a tougher question. So I think that really what it comes from, despite what I look like.
I'm already working on the hashtag friendly face Bukowskis trend.
I'm sure that's just going to catch fire. Yeah, that'll take right off.
Kyle, I'm sure our listeners are curious about how they can find you on social media and what you're up to. Why don't you take a moment to maybe talk about things you're working on and maybe anything that you'd like to plug while you have an opportunity here?
Oh, boy. No, I really don't got much going on from that standpoint. I think if there's one thing that I'm trying to, well, there's a lot of things I'm trying to work on at this point, but that's certainly one, is just being, have a little bit more of a presence out there. Like, I'm not a big guy that, you know, I'm not big on, you know, letting everybody know exactly what I'm up to in a given day. And that's not because I'm a shy or a real private person or anything of that regard. I love having conversations with different people, but I just always feel like, you know, what is anyone going to care that I'm over here doing this, or now I'm out doing that, right? Like, I just feel like no one's going to care. No one's going to give a damn about that. So I think that's kind of why I don't do a whole lot of that. Like, my Instagram account is privatized. Like, I don't do a big public thing out on there. That's just a little bit more personal. But I know certainly on Twitter there, I mean, my handle is at SN Kyle Bukowskis. And that's, you know, primarily for just kind of more news stuff and more stuff related to the job. But I will say guys, I do want to work a little bit more on just having a little bit more color to my Twitter account, if you will, and just make, you know, jazz it up a little bit and make it a little bit more interesting and make it, you know, worth people's while if they're going to take the time to click follow on my profile, for sure.
Just let people know what you're having for lunch, and then your followers will explode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just, you know, go down to the...
It's the simple things, right?
Photos with puppies, and yeah, exactly. That's how you drive the numbers. Clickbait voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. He's the ringside host on Rogers Sportsnet, a staple on Hockey Night in Canada, a big admirer of Paul Kariya, extremely humble and with a friendly face, and a real pro. Thank you so much for joining us on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan.
All right, boys. Real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our next guest on today's episode of Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan is a former athlete, a motivational speaker, and someone whom I've enjoyed watching on CTV Sports as one of the premier sportscasters across Canada for decades. Joe Tilley is on HVL. Joe, thanks for joining the show.
Well, thank you, Ari.
But listen, let me ask you something that I've been, you know, as someone who's been watching you for many, many years, as someone who's had a pulse when it comes to what's happening with the Toronto Maple Leafs and what fans have come to experience over what is a generational shift of appreciating NHL hockey in this city, I want to get your impressions of these Toronto Maple Leafs, these young Toronto Maple Leafs that have now been the subject of so much significant media hype and expectations that I think you'll agree you probably haven't seen anything like this ever.
No, never. I'm just going to say that. I haven't seen anything like this since I've been in Toronto since 1984, and I followed the Leafs for longer than that. I don't remember, I have no idea what it was like back in the early 60s into 67 when they won their last cup, when Conn Spike was running the show. But I'll tell you, this is a different regime than I've ever seen. And, you know, they've done everything right to this point.
Which, of course, is hardly synonymous with previous Maple Leafs organizations and front offices. Let's face it, with maybe the exception of the early 90s and the Pat Quinn era, there's been slim pickings when it comes to continued sustained success, hasn't there?
No, for sure. I mean, I don't think they've ever been willing to blow it up and rebuild until Shanahan came along with Lamoriello and decided, you know what, this is the only way we're going to do it. I think Burke was sort of, sounded like he was willing to do it, seemed like he was willing to do it, but then he comes in, but then he turns around and makes a Kessel trade, and really jumped the gun on that one, and that's what, you know, we know what happened as a result of that. But, you know, it did lay the groundwork for what we see today. Because who knows? I mean, if things had worked out a different way, then maybe we would have had a team that was okay, but not the type of potential that it has now.
Well, and of course, it's no surprise that when somebody trades away two first-round draft picks in a second to get a player with another organization, that there's certain precedents that get set. I guess you could say Burke was a trailblazer for creating some semblance of proper team-building philosophy that now exists with the current regime.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, I wouldn't say that, you know, Shanahan and company learned from that, because they, you know, Lou Lamoriello has been around a long time, and Shanahan is a patient guy, and I think he realized that because of the fan base that the Maple Leafs have, he knew that he could blow this up and it wouldn't cause any problems at all. And of course, it hasn't.
Now, countless fans have appreciated your work for literally decades, and so as a result, you've kind of had an opportunity, if you will, to grow with the scene, appreciate the new generation that's consuming a lot of hockey that now exists in this market. Of course, it doesn't hurt when a big company like Rogers invests billions of dollars in the hockey market to make sure that it's churning out the product everyone wants to appreciate. Now, we know that winning is much better than losing. We also know that unlike baseball, in hockey, whether you win or lose, there's been a certain expectation that the fans will fill the seats. What is it about this edition of the Toronto Maple Leafs that might even change the most hardened cynic from thinking that, hey, at some point this bubble's going to burst?
Depth. I mean, you look throughout the organization, they've got a lot of young players. They've got a lot of young players playing for the Marlies right now who can play for many NHL teams. It's a very tough roster to crack. And, you know, it's kind of too bad for those young guys, like the kid of Soshnikov and other guys down on the farm who would like a chance to play here. But, you know what, it's just a tough lineup to crack. But that's the way it should be.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because you've seen many different Maple Leafs teams. Now, let me turn this around on you and ask your impressions of what is the current quagmire, for the sake of a better word, that's going on in Montreal. What's your whole appreciation of what's happening with Marc Bergevin and company down in Montreal?
Well, I guess you could liken it to kind of like what previous Leaf regimes have done. They're looking for the quick fix. They're looking to patch holes here and there. They've made some trades that have not turned out. They haven't been able to develop any world-class goal scorers. And so they've tried to go out and get them, like, you know, pick up Jonathan Drouin, right, in a trade. Mm-hmm. But they haven't built the type of system, the type of organization that the Leafs are currently building. Now, it did help. Winning a lottery certainly helped. I mean, that put the Leafs in a much better spot than I think anybody could have envisioned when they got a chance to draft Austin Matthews. You know, winning the lottery is definitely it just changed the landscape entirely. And that's what happened to the Leafs. I mean, the Habs have not had that opportunity because they've been good enough mm-hmm. for so long. Good enough to make the playoffs, good enough to be, you know, okay. Not good enough to challenge for a cup, but good enough to be okay. But that doesn't put them in a position to draft a good player, so they have to make deals to get those players. So they're in a different position than the Leafs. At least, you know, really, they only had that one off year. They only had the one bad year where they got to sink to the bottom, where they got the first pick in the draft. And, you know, at that point, they'd already been bad for a few years, so they got a chance to draft, you know, Mitch Marner and Morgan Riley and Nazem Kadri and those, you know, guys who are 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in the draft. And so they're building these picks, building these young guys because they've been bad. And then they got really bad for the 1 year, and they got Austin Matthews. They're lucky enough to win the lottery, and they got Austin Matthews. So that changes everything. There's no way you could compete with that, with luck. You just can't. It's like when the Penguins, when they have that, when they have the lottery coming out of the strike, the lockout, and the Penguins got Sid Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
That's just luck. The Penguins were a good team that was able to drive to draft a generational player.
Absolutely, and then followed up with yet another generational player whom, if he were playing anywhere else but Pittsburgh, Evgeny Malkin would probably be getting twice the amount of publicity, I'm sure you'll agree. Now, I'm wondering, Joe, does that diminish from what the Maple Leafs are achieving in any way this notion that after hearing Mike Babcock 2 years ago tell the market that, hey, we're in for a lot of pain and there'll be a lot of suffering and this will be a long transition, to now realize that as a result of the aforementioned good luck that you talked about, this team has basically found a way to expedite what should have been a multi-year plan into basically what's only been 1 year of pain and suffering?
Yeah, but they're just using what they got. They're not going out and get stupid and going crazy and saying, okay, we got a chance to win a cup here. Let's get rid of some pieces. Let's get rid of some Nylanders or Marners or some pieces and bring in, you know, somebody who, like a Shea Weber or something like that and try to make this run now. You know, they're patient, and they're building this thing. And they're not building it for 1 year or 2 years. They're building it for many years. Like, we're hoping that Austin Matthews gets a chance to play for many Stanley Cups. That's the idea. And the way to do that is to continue to use that young talent. I mean, listen, their farm claim is club is the number one team in the American Hockey League. That shows you what kind of talent they've got.
I think it shows you that there's a real renaissance happening here. This is not the likes of anything we've seen, I think you'll agree, on the hockey side, where we can talk about really young, and I don't just mean young players, I mean 19-year-old Calder winner. That's gonna promise you many, many years of competition if you keep developing players on the right side of 30, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're doing it right. And again, they lucked into it by getting Austin Matthews because they're a lot better than they probably should have been to this part in the rebuild.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they'll take it. They'll take it.
Absolutely. Joe, it's been a pleasure having you drop in here at Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan. This is the part of the show where I like to give my guests a shameless plug. Why don't you talk about some projects or things you have on the go and how my listeners can find you on social media?
Well, as you know, Ari, things are ending at CTV Toronto after 33 and a half years. And so that's an interesting part of life change for me.
Sure.
However, I had been preparing for this. I'm doing some acting, which is kind of fun. My major in school was drama, and I used to do quite a bit of acting, but I'm playing roles, and I recently got a role I auditioned for and got a role as NFL play-by-play guy. I know it's a little bit of a stretch there, but it's kind
sometimes
of in my
life
realm.
Imitates art, and art imitates
it's for a show called Condor that's going to be coming out in January. It's American production, but filmed in Toronto, so I got that role. That was kind of fun. I just auditioned for another role last night for a pundit. A news pundit, sort of like a CNN pundit for another show that's called Phil Mack. We'll see how that goes. But you know, we just put things out there, and I've started doing what I'm calling a Snapchat. It's just basically a 30 to 40 second rant, snap rant. It's a 30 to 40 second rant that I'm doing, and it's kind of a fun gig. I do about three or four of those a week, and I'm posting them on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and Facebook. So just started doing that, and we'll see where life takes me. I was sort of preparing for retirement anyway, and when this came along at CTV, it turned out pretty well for me. I got a nice package and it was good. So it's been a nice run.
I'm sure on behalf of many of my listeners, when I say this, I'm sure that many of them would agree that you're someone that we can't get enough of. So for me, the way I see it, the more Joe Tilley, the better. You know, as someone who had his finger on the pulse of this Toronto sports scene since 1984, I want you to know that your work has always been appreciated and that we here at HVL will do whatever we can to support the Tilley brand moving forward. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
Sure. You can reach me on Twitter at JoeSwissTV. I haven't been on Twitter for a long time. I'm sort of late getting into it, but it's okay. I'm having fun, some fun with it now. And there you go.
There you go. Joe Tilley, critically acclaimed sportscaster, neophyte Twitter user, and burgeoning actor you better pay attention to for coming on the show.
All right. Thanks, Ari.
Our next guest here on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan is an author, a teacher, the VP of the Belleville Senators in the AHL. Oh, and he's also one of the most tenured and highly respected hosts at Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Roger Lajoie is on HVL. Roger, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Ari, and checks in the mail for that introduction. You're off to a great start. Thank you.
I know you're a busy man, and so I really appreciate you coming on the show. I can think of no better person right now to ask in all of their years of following the Toronto Maple Leafs in particular. Roger, have you ever witnessed anything remotely close to the level of expectation and media hype that you're seeing generated by this year's team? And I'm wondering, how do you think this impacts management or managerial decisions when it comes to making traditional hockey moves?
Well, without question, the Leafs are always overhyped, Ari. The expectations are always through the roof just because you're in Toronto. There's no doubt. But I will say this, is legitimate expectation and legitimate hype. Unlike a lot of other years where the hype and the expectation was quite frankly ridiculous. The team hasn't won a playoff series in more than a decade, and yet the expectation is, Vegas is picking them to win the Stanley Cup in terms of the odds. Not to back or justify any editorial comment with what Vegas thinks, because they're just trying to get people to bet. But end of the day, it's fair enough. The Leafs are really as good as anybody. Why not them? And so it is legitimate, but I think the biggest difference, Ari, and it's interesting the way you phrase the question, I think the biggest reason is, how is management going to react to that expectation and that hype? They're not going to act to it at all, and that's why this team really has a legitimate chance to succeed. For many decades in Toronto, Ari, the team was run by the fans, run by the media, run by the armchair critics. One of the reasons I am as optimistic in buying into the Leafs hype from their standpoint is that Lou Lamoriello doesn't know what Twitter is. Lou Lamoriello is not interested in what people are talking about and conjecturing about and what are you going to do about this. He's won multiple Stanley Cups. He is 74, 75 years old. He is a veteran hockey man who has been around. He's not interested in that. Mike Babcock has won a Stanley Cup, 2 gold medals. I don't have to go through his whole resume. Everybody knows who he is. If there are two people, and that's the coach and the GM, and of course there's the rest of the management team that's involved, but if there are two people that are not going to pay any attention to anybody's expectation or hype and just do the job they think they're going to have to do, it is Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock. And because of that, I am optimistic a great deal for the Maple Leafs. They will do what needs to be done, because I think far too often in the last decade, Ari, and beyond then, decisions have been made with pressure of fans and media. That won't be the case this time. So I think it's legitimate hype.
Let's look at it now from the Montreal Canadiens perspective, where all of those things that you mentioned, which have been contributing to a reality now that is more solid, stable, and focused on winning, what's happening on the Montreal side where we're seeing the exact opposite, where all that hype and media is now pushing management into what it seems like a corner of decisions they could regret?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak for the individuals in Montreal as closely as the ones in Toronto, but Montreal is so similar to Toronto in terms of how quite often it's the fans and the media that wind up running the team and not the people that run it. But in terms of, the challenges that Bergevin faces and some of the other people who are trying to operate and run this team right now, I guess I can see it to a certain point that they would be maybe more suspect to the kind of pressure that previous Toronto management was. But I don't think that's the problem in Montreal. I just think the problem in Montreal is they've made some bad decisions. They have just not done a great job in putting together a team that can be competitive in a salary cap era in the NHL. And I'm not going to blame the media or the fans for that. I'm going to blame the people making the decisions. One of the reasons I think that so many of us just love sports and have so much fun with all of sports and all of the things that are involved in it is because it's won lost. At the end of the day, you can see, you can understand who won and who didn't just by the standings. And the Canadians, unfortunately for them, are in the opposite position of the Leafs. I think they're going to have a heck of a time staying competitive in this salary cap era. I don't like what they're doing at all. And as a guy who grew up seeing a lot of great teams in Montreal, it's very disappointing for everybody who follows the Habs. For the first time in maybe, I don't even want to quote the number of years, the Leafs are in a much better position than the Canadians today and for tomorrow. And that's just the unfortunate reality in Montreal right now.
That's an awesome quote that I think I'll use on Twitter, how you just carefully crafted what is something that is, if anything, there's a surrealism in the air for many hockey fans of both markets. And how much of that on the Montreal side is it related to that elephant in the room known as cultural decisions? For example, there are many fans of the franchise who are having a very difficult time fully appreciating, even to this point, why a P.K. Subban was traded, or why a Jonathan Drouin involved trading the kind of prospect that is now making waves in Tampa Bay. Is that a factor, do you think, Roger, that is something that fans unfortunately have to deal with for better and for worse? Or will we one day see a Montreal Canadiens team that makes hockey decisions not based on anything else but whether or not they're practical?
Well, you know, the Subban deal and the Drouin deal are really completely different animals, I think, when it comes to that area. And when we, you know, look at them as an entity, I don't really see too much of a common situation. I mean, back to the Subban deal, PK is a great player, but he's a personality. He's larger than life. We know what transpired there. They picked up a defenseman in Shea Weber, a veteran, a great player who I think unfortunately lost the that trade was came across a lot worse in Montreal because of the popularity and the difference of the players involved. Subban's a highlight reel player. Weber's the kind of guy who's on the ice when Team Canada's trying to protect a one-goal lead in the Olympics. So he's a pretty good hockey player, too. And you read some people's reactions after that deal, and you would think that, you know, it had been an ultimate superstar dealt for a nobody, and that's just not the case. I don't know if it's so much a cultural thing. I just don't, you know, that. So at the end of the day, your W's and your L's aren't in the area that you're in, and therefore that's what you're judged by. Now, Drouin, this is in its infancy. I'm prepared to give him a lot more time to see what kind of player he will continue to develop into. I like him a lot, and I think he might be a very, very good fit for Montreal moving forward, and the returns are very minimal there. And even with PK and Weber, one of the reasons that deal looked so bad, it was because it was halfway, you know, PK is dealt because the Canadians are in an all-in mode, go for the cup, and Nashville goes to the cup, and the Canadians don't. So that's when, you know, the judgment from that one came. But I don't know if it was so much cultural. I think those, and hockey decisions are also made on how the dressing room reacts to people, how you like things. It's not all just politics and culture. Subban for Weber could have been a deal, basically, that the hockey team sat down and said that, end of the day, we think this is a better direction to go right now. Same thing that's with the true. Drouin deal. So I don't really buy into that it's all about culture and problems. I think it's a general manager. At the end of the day, a look at his roster, look at Toronto's roster, and you tell me who you think is better. And the rest of it is subject for conjecture and discussion, but I don't think it's culture. I just think it's hockey moves that didn't work out very well.
That's fascinating, because if we go with the notion that sometimes the successful move might be the one that you don't make as opposed to the one that you do, let's turn to the Toronto Maple Leafs. We see them surging, having a very strong season to start the year, high expectations. There's no doubt that this team, all things being equal, will find itself in a position to make the postseason. My question to you is, knowing that there is the advantage of depth and that there are players coming up soon who will be free agents, would you like to see this team perhaps make that move in the locker room to reinforce themselves? Or do you believe that if things are going well, if it ain't broken, don't try to fix it?
Well, I think especially in a salary cap era in the NHL, there's really not much you can do, to be honest with you, that pronounced without really shaking your team around. I like the nucleus of the team now. Clearly, they have some issues, but what team in the National Hockey League doesn't have issues, i.e. they need some more help on the blue line. They could use some more help in certain areas. But end of the day, I don't think it's an either or. If this team is solidly in a playoff spot and thinks it has a chance to seriously make a run at a Stanley Cup, well, then you go about and add and help try to do it. But when you're up against the cap and when you're in an area and in a league where you don't have the flexibility, it's not like all of a sudden they can just say, yeah, let's trade a bunch of draft picks and younger players for a veteran. Plus, Ari, the Leafs are in a unique position. Their best players are their younger players. That's not always the way it works. When your best players are your older players, it's easy enough to say, get rid of the young guys and bring in some more. But when your top players are all in their second year, you're really kind of limited in what you can do. So I think it's stay the course. Yeah, if they can tinker and add another piece. But I think this team is positioned to be good for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And I think that's all you can ask for. Assemble the best team you can, take your shot, and hope all the chips fall your way 1 year, and there you go. You win a cup.
So let's do a quick LeJoie Shapiro time machine to Christmas. It's the 25th of December. Give me a quick summation of what you expect, where the Toronto Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens will be, and what could potentially happen to either franchise at that junction.
Well, I always say, Ari, as fun as predictions are, it's analysis over predictions, because we don't know. Here's one of the reasons I always say we don't know, because it comes down to injuries. Let's face it, the Toronto Maple Leafs have been very fortunate. Although Austin Matthews missed a handful of games, they've been very healthy, and that's a big factor. The Canadiens in particular, with their $11 million goaltender, have been not. And, people say injuries are, shouldn't be used as an excuse. Injuries, though, are an explanation. Maybe it's not an excuse, but they are an explanation. But if you're asking me to predict where I think they are at Christmas time, I think the Leafs are pretty much where they are. I think the Leafs will challenge for a top three spot in the Eastern Conference this year. I believe they're that good. I don't think Montreal is quite as bad as the record. And if they do not do anything to augment the team, however, I can't see them crashing into a playoff spot. I don't. I think they'll be closer, but I just don't see it. I don't think there's enough offensive talent up there. So my view is I think the Leafs will be where they are now, and I think the Habs might be a little bit better, especially if Price returns to health and continues playing the way he has in previous years. But I think so far, and we're only a month or little over a month away from Christmas, I think so far what you see is what you get for both teams.
My, how time flies indeed. Roger, please share with our listeners some of the projects and things you have on the go and how they can find you on social media.
Well, thank you, Ari, and I enjoy listening to your podcast. And you've been a regular on one of my major gigs, which is Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I've been their fill-in host, their weekend host, evenings, whenever they need me, for 25 years. My 25th anniversary is actually coming up on November the 30th. The station celebrated 25 years as a sports station in September, and it's 25 years for me. I'm on Twitter, at the Rog 590, at the Rog 590, and on The Fan, and very, very fortunate and happy to be there and continuing a couple of days a week. And as you mentioned in your very nice introduction, I'm also the vice president of the Belleville Senators of the American Hockey League. We moved from Binghamton last year, so I've been very lucky in my career and life to be able to be a media broadcaster, writer, at the same time have good experience in the hockey business. I worked in the OHL as an executive for more than a decade, and I was, when this opportunity came up to help run the team here in Belleville, I took it, and we've got great crowds. So if anybody's in the Belleville area at any time, we welcome you to come down to our new remodeled arena here in Belleville at the Yardman Arena. And it's always great to connect with listeners on Twitter at the Rog 590, and of course always at sportsnet.ca/FAN590. You can always find our broadcast there.
Roger LeJoie, author, teacher, hockey executive, raconteur, and a good friend of the show. Thanks for joining me on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan.
Pleasure, Ari. Thank you so much.